Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, blood, sweat, and data. By Premium Plus Sports, that's Premium Plus Sports, the best travel agency in the business. By USA-SwimRun.com. If you haven't tried a swim run event, grab a buddy and give one a try. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we sent out this last year 2,806 grants totaling $4.3 million. Keep challenged athletes in game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville and iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, one of our all-time favorites here on Babbittville Radio. He just finished ninth in Kona, former Olympic rower, Team Sky professional cyclist, now a professional Ironman guy who one day will win the Ironman World Championship. His name is Mr. Cameron Wirth. Cam, how you doing?
Good morning, Bob. I'm great, thanks. And as always, your introductions just absolutely make me grow about 3 foot taller. So thank you.
You're very welcome. So what I would love is if you talk to a Dave Scott or Mark Allen, say, hey, this guy's coming into the sport, and you know what? He's going to do about 15 iron distance races in next year or so, next 2 years, because he feels like he needs to learn the event. They'd look at me cross-eyed and go, what is wrong with this person? But your philosophy is a little different, right? You don't go into every iron distance race you're doing going, I'm here to win. You're there to sort of learn this brand new sport?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I don't go there not to win. I go there to do the best with, you know, the objectives we set. You have to be realistic. I'm racing against some phenomenal athletes. You know, I think in this era, I mean, the sport's definitely blossoming, and we're probably seeing the greatest depth we've ever seen in the sport.
Yeah.
And more athletes prepared to go out there and race, and particularly, you know, race against me as opposed to just let me, you know, have it all my own way, which is fantastic. So, no, I mean, it's not that I don't try and win. Yeah, I mean, I race a lot. I use them as training. We found that the only way for me to learn certain things is by being in the race. And, you know, what people don't get, and I guess even, you know, Mark and Dave, is they've done, you know, thousands of smaller races and picked up on little things. You know, even waking up in the morning and dealing with the nerves of waking up in the morning and what you can eat and what you shouldn't eat. Traveling, you know, packing your bike and the things you need to take to a race. And we had a situation in Kona where, you know, I really like to use power bar gels, and you know, you just expect to rock up at the, you know, the village and grab your power bar gels like I've done at, as you say, 15 races,
right,
over the past couple of years. And of course, it's not a sponsor of the event, and it's banished from the town, and there's none there. And all of a sudden, I've got to use something else. So, you know, that was a small thing we, you know, you learn. And all these little bits and pieces are just stuff that you only learn by trial and, you know, by being in the environment. And, you know, we're getting a lot closer to making less mistakes. And and we've been able to do that and get to a point where, you know, we're quite competitive in, as I said, probably in the era where the sport is at its most competitive. I mean, we're seeing times we've never ever seen or people dreamed of in the past, particularly over the last 18 months. And yeah, I don't think you can question the way we've chosen to do things, and in time, you know, going forward, we'll ideally prove the doubters wrong.
So what I love is when I look at your progression, especially in the run, right? You go from you know, like a 3:15-ish type of guy to this year you ran a 6-minute PR and ran a 2:52 marathon, a Challenge Almere. And I know that's not Kona, but it's like all these little bonuses, all these little things that you're gaining. How have you moved from being really, you really weren't a runner per se, to a guy who's getting off the bike now? And really it's not a line to think that in Kona you're going to run sub 3 hours. You just ran 3:06. So, And that dropped significantly from the year before. What have you done to improve your running so much?
I've always believed, or we've always believed, you know, that there's Kona, you need to be prepared to, you need to be good enough to win it, you know, on your almost your worst day. And I think if you, certainly in the previous few years, you speak to Jan or Patrick, I don't think they've had their most amazing days. I mean, even though Patrick this year, he had his moments in the run, you know, but he's such a great champion, was able to get it together and still win. You know, to be able to do that, you know, you have to be consistently good. And on the bike, you know, I'm at that level now, I think, where I can basically every single day go out and do quite a good ride, you know. Basically
right.
Put myself in a position to win any race. And even that can happen when I don't feel great. Like even, say, Nice this year, for example, you know, probably the worst I've ever felt. But I was able to, you know, turn it around, get myself in position to have a great race. And so on the run, yeah, we've seen the progression. And that's been great. But the reality is I'm not solid yet. You know, I've run, you know, under 3 hours twice now and a couple around 3 hours and quite a few around the low threes. And it won't be until I either make a big jump and run a 240 or a 230 in a normal marathon or multiple 250s in races where we can be confident that just on any day, you know, I can go to Kona and run, you know, as you say, that 250, 3 hour, you know, high 240 sort of range. So I think the people underestimate that those great, the real top guys, you know, it's often not their best day that gets the job done in Kona, but they're just so consistent that even on their worst day, they still put together a great performance. You know, their okay day is much better than everyone else's okay day. And that's, you know, it's a place we're working towards getting to on the run, whereas we're probably already there on the, you know, in the swim and the bike.
What was fascinating to me is you did Ironman Nice and you get third there, and then a week later you're doing Challenge Roth, and I don't know if that was really in the plans early on, but you mentioned that you learned something from that, because you, in your mind, I think you thought, you know, when Sebastian Kienle is running well or Jesse Thomas is running well, they just look smooth and effortless. And in Challenge Roth, both those guys went by you, and they were nothing like that. You know, and you learned something from that because you thought, you know what, those guys are running hard. They're working. They're suffering. And I needed to learn. That's not something I can learn from a training day. I learned that because I saw that happen to me.
Exactly. And what I really picked up on there, you know, we've obviously got a bit of flack. People think I'm chasing bike course records, which is, you know, complete rubbish. I even had journalist Brad Culp asked me, you know, how much I was paid by Pinarello for setting another bike course record, and he had multiple bike sponsors willing to pay me a huge amount more.
Right.
I said, Brad, my coach Jim Kerrison had any bonuses relating to bike course records taken out of my contracts because we're there to win the race. They didn't want me thinking about that. They want me thinking about trying to win the race.
Right.
There's absolutely zero incentive in that for me. So obviously there's no reason for me to go out there and bury myself in the bike, you know, at all costs just to lead the race. So what I've kept, you know, working hard and trying to figure out how to run off the bike. And it was finally in Challenge Roth that, you know, I was able to ride there with Sebastian. I actually had a little gap on him. I was quite tired. I'd raced the week before, so I had to really measure my effort. And I got off the bike feeling pretty good. And at that point, actually, that day I went on to run my best ever marathon, 3 hours, and went sub 8 hours, went 7:58, and I was fifth in, you know, quite a high-quality field. But when Sebi came past me, I mean, the guy looked like death warmed up. I mean, he'd absolutely smashed himself, you know, just to stay close to me. And then he goes and suffers through a 2:48 marathon. And that sort of started me thinking. And then you've got 3 hours to think out there, Bob. And the next one that I saw was Jesse Thomas.
Yeah.
And Jesse had spent the first half of that bike ride with Sebi and I. He said he's 2 hour PB for power.
Yes.
You know, the fastest ever 90K he'd ridden in his life. And then he blew up like a cheap watch and lost about 15, 16 minutes in the last 90K. Got off, got into the run, and knocked out a 2:44 marathon, ran his way into third place. And honestly, when I saw him coming the other way after about 5 or 6K, I would have been very surprised to see him at the finish. And what that taught me, I'm not going any harder than anyone else on the bike. I mean, I'm fortunate that I'm perhaps more efficient than these guys and can ride at quite a high level, you know, at a very low perceived effort. And that I just need to be stronger and more resilient and learn how to get off the bike with that fatigue and run fast. And that's been a great mindset shift. And I went to the next race. I ran 2:58 in Zurich. You know, I could barely walk when I got off the bike that day. Ran my best marathon. Almere, another step again. Honestly, I treated that bike race. I just went absolutely everything I could get, everything I could throw at it, and ran a 2:52 off that. In Kona, I got a bit clever, you know. And as happened last year, I got to a point where I was in the perfect position, leading the race, complete control, and, you know, took that mindset away and started to think about looking after myself, thinking about it's a long day, it's hot, all these other things. And I backed off the bike quite a lot in that last, you know, 30-40K, thinking, you know, I'm going to have to run fast here. I need to save energy. And the reality is I just never got in the groove. You know, I just didn't get going. I lost that intensity. Patrick caught me too easily. I gave up and, you know, and the rest is history. And so it's sad that that happened on that day, but the you know, it's going to take it takes you know, time to develop that ability to execute the perfect race. And again, I'm not playing with jokers here. You know, I'm trying to race the best guys in the world, and I never shy away from the challenge, and I never will. And I'm really excited about, you know, what's ahead.
So there's a point there during a run. And cool part from my perspective is, hey, it's great that you're running fast, but you're also wearing a CAF visor, which I was pretty excited about. But you're running along and you're leading the race, and Patrick comes up, the defending champion comes up, catches you, and you guys exchange a couple words. What did you guys say to each other?
Yeah, I mean, I just complimented, you know, Patrick on his tactics for the day, and he complimented me on the way I've been racing and the way I'd taken it on. And I just said to him, you know, mate, go out there and smash the record, because, you know, that's what I dreamed of doing. And
right.
He thanked me, you know, gave me the famous fist pump.
Yeah.
famous in the tri world now. And you know, I really wished him the best. You know, I knew I wasn't going to be able to do what I dreamed of doing, which is what he did. But if anyone was going to do it, you know, he was the other person in the field that had gone out there, had a plan, and wanted to make a statement, you know, and do something spectacular. And I felt the sport needed that, needed someone to stand up and do something special. And I was really, really, really pleased to see Patrick pull it off. And at that moment, I just wanted him to know that I was behind him. You know, that I'd given it everything I had, and I wasn't good enough. But you know, I really wanted to see him do it and just make it a special day. So. It was a nice moment, and you know, you earn respect, mutual respect from your peers by, you know, competing.
Right.
And I think competing with honour and respect, and I'm really, really grateful that and proud that Patrick and I were able to share that, and you know, and I'm excited, you know, to battle with him again, you know, in the future.
So I had Andrew Starkowitz was on my show before leading into the race, and we talked about, you know, has like, you know, there could be a point there in a bike ride where you and, you know, and Cam Wirth and potentially Sebastian Kienle and Lionel Sanders, you guys could, you know, basically the same three amigos from last year with Andrew Starkowitz, you guys could make a big dent into that lead group and put a big gap. And his response was, well, I'll never see those. You know, I certainly won't see Cam. I'll be 5 minutes up the road. But were you surprised when you caught him on a bike?
No, not at all. I mean, I knew I could swim well. I mean, I've got the best swimming coaches in the world. You know, Dennis Cotterloo, of course, has had the mile record holder for the last 20 years in the pool, and Sean Kelly from the UK, the best open water swim coach there's ever been. So, you know, we knew I'd be in that front pack swimming. I guess we'd been pretty clever with the way I'd swam during the year, so that no one was expecting that. What surprised me most about Andrew was, and I was very disappointed to see it, was him trying to, you know, follow media bikes. And I'd heard rumours about that. And when I got to the front of the race, he was, you know, noticeably pulling into the road and trying to get in the slipstream. And I had to actually. And what disappointed was the head commissaire didn't seem to, you know, turn a blind eye. So I personally rode up, asked the bike to move, and made a point of letting the commissaire know this was going on. And he apologised. Oh, Cameron, I didn't notice it, which I can't understand how he couldn't. And from there, I mean, I didn't get much assistance from Andrew. In fact, I'm disappointed that I gave him more respect than I should have, because I think I could have put myself in a better position to ride well. But, you know, often when someone talks a lot like that and they don't ever turn up to the big races with the big guys, you probably should know better. But, a bit disappointing from him. But, he's been good for the sport as well. You know, he takes it on and races from the front and has some great success. And has certainly been, someone pushing the boundaries on the bike. And, I wish him well.
So the way the race is set up in Kona, with the draft zone they have, and you have to ride single file, and you see people, and it's like you're in a situation where you can go by 6-7 guys without a problem. A lot of these other guys, for them to, they can't just pass one person. If there's a line of 7 guys, they got to pass all 7 of them. I think it sort of discourages people from racing. When is a guy who obviously rides differently than everybody else, when you look at what's happening out there, are riders discouraged from going for it, or is it just people being tentative?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly takes a solid effort, and I as far as what my plan was around that. You don't want to get caught out with that, and we'd practice transitions so that, knowing I'd be in that front pack, but probably towards the middle of the back of it could be up to 20 guys.
Right.
So it's important to get through past a lot of them in transition.
Right.
And I got on the bike, certainly towards the front with Sebi and Patrick, and there was only a couple of guys ahead. Of course, there was quite a big group, but I knew it was important that I got to that big group before Sebi could. And certainly, made sure that Lionel didn't give himself any chance of getting up there, psychologically, because he'd be on his own.
Right.
Because that can be, absolutely, I mean, that you, as far as just power goes, it's pretty common knowledge. I put all my data on Strava, so everyone knows I averaged around 300 watts for the ride. But for me to do that pass when I got to that front swim pack, there was sort of a couple of groups of 5 or 6, you're talking about increasing the power to, 450 to 500 watts to go past and make an impact.
Right.
And either make sure that, no one follows you, or if they do follow you, they've got to work hard to do it. I heard, guys were very critical of Patrick's tactics with Andreas and so forth. I complimented Patrick on that. I mean, that was brilliant. I mean, he didn't break the rules. He didn't get a drafting penalty. Other guys
right.
did.
Yep.
What I find sad is the ones that complained about it that sat in that group with him, and they talked about trying to get to the front and pass. Well, if you want to get to the front and pass and do the work, you can do it, because I do it all the time. You've just got to put in a bit of effort. And so, not only was Patrick able to have his plan executed so perfectly, but he had all those other guys, between Andreas and Patrick, giving him more protection. So it couldn't have, given him a better run. And, I mean, what else can you do but applaud that? I mean, he hasn't broken the rules. So, that's something that guys, I think, discourages, but it boils down to the fact, Bob, that they just can't, or they're not prepared to, that does damage the run and all sorts of other things. So that's a decision you make. Do you stay with the best runner in the world and know your only chance you've got is second, or do you try and race, and I'm proud that I actually had a crack at racing this guy. I tried to take him on, and if the others want to sit there and let him win, well, that's their prerogative. That's not what I'm there for.
How different were the conditions this year than last year?
Last year to me certainly felt faster with the wind, because I guess the way I ride my bike, I'm able to utilize that, like a good ocean swimmer. They can use the waves to swim quick.
Yeah.
They can float with the ocean. And I definitely wouldn't say that. Go as far as to say I would have won the race had it been blowing a gale, but it would have been a very different situation, and then that would not have allowed Patrick to implement his tactics, with Andreas, because if the wind's coming, blowing, 50 mile an hour from Tasmania across the Pacific, it blows apart, any group. I mean, you have 30 seconds gap between riders and you're getting no protection. So It certainly changed the dynamic. You know, I personally didn't ride as hard, knowing that I'd have to run faster, because I knew they'd be fresher. You know, I knew they'd be coming harder than normal. I think this year, you know, it would have definitely made for more of an exciting race down the stretch with Patrick, which is, as you know, what I was, you know, prepared for. And I think I showed that I was capable of putting myself in that position. But one strength I have over these guys is my ability to ride in the tough weather, and that was taken away from me this year. But you know what, that, you know, Bob, the reality is the best triathletes performed. You know, there was a day when the best triathletes could execute a swim, a bike, and a run without the influences of weather and whatever else. So we definitely saw the best triathletes succeed. I just needed, I was able to control everything I could control, had a great swim, got in the lead early on the bike, controlled the race. Everything I couldn't control, you know, I hope that Sebastian would be back there putting some pressure on the running group, and ideally Lionel would have perhaps caught them by the turnaround and created a bit of chaos, but none of that happened, and I was on my own. So, but that's fine. I've got to come back next year and have a better run and be able to finish it off no matter what the conditions, and that's how you need to be the best.
Well, so when I look at, Patrick Lange rode 428 last year, 416 this year. Bart Arnotts rode 432 last year, 412 this year. You were 412, 409, right? So you took off less time than the other guys. Obviously, if the conditions were more brutal this year, you probably wouldn't have been as close to your 409 or 410 as you were as you did this year, and they could have lost 10, 15 minutes. So you got to come away going, you know what, this was, I've seen that race for 40 years. I have never seen 89, 96 this year. We're like the days where we didn't have much wind and had some cloud cover. So you got to come away from it going, and I'm sure you and your coach look at it and go, hey, it was a freak day. There's not much you can do about it. We got 7 minutes. On a typical day, we get 14, 15 minutes.
Yeah, precisely. I've said all along, and you know, all season, you know, all we really wanted to do this year, I mean, we looked at last year and what, you know, where we got to, potentially what we didn't do well and whatever else. And Tim, who's, you know, Kerrison, is obviously one of the best coaches in endurance. Well, very hard to argue that he's not the greatest endurance coach ever, with his rowing pedigree, swimming pedigree, and, of course, the Team Sky. And he said, I don't think you did too much wrong last year. We just need to do everything a little bit better this year. And I think we showed that. You know, I consistently finished races. I was consistently on around the podium. I did a much better race in Kona. And, one thing that we banked on was the weather. And we had to bank on that because we knew my run was still vulnerable. And there was nothing that we found out, you know, that we didn't already know going in. It obviously would have been fantastic if I'd run a run PB. But we know deep down that's probably never going to happen in Kona. You're just going to do what we've done, keep doing what we've done, and just try and do it better again. And there's already things in place to just do that and keep chipping away. And my tactic, I think I put myself in a position to win the race,
right?
And that's all you can do. And there's only two of us that were in the field this year that did that. You know, and one, and I ended up coming ninth. Still as it sounds, but that was it. And I'm one of the contenders. I was one of the contenders last year. I did the same thing last year. I mean, there's only been, four people that have led on that run in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
Well, three. Lionel, myself, and of course Patrick when it matters most. So, you bring Jan back in next year, ideally. I mean, we really missed him. Having him as well would have changed the dynamic. I mean, people say, Jan was there. And I said, I wish that was the worst news I ever got. Jan told me the day before, and I was devastated for him. Devastated for him.
Yeah.
Sorry.
How did it change the race, you think?
Well, it just would have made it a hell of a lot harder. You know, you had the greatest, guys of all time in the field, you know, also keen to make a statement. You know, there would have been three of us there that were dreaming of smashing the record and going faster than anyone had ever gone before. And, of course, that was going to push the whole level of the race up. And for me, it would have had, or Yar might have been with me, which would have forced more reaction behind.
Right.
You know, I mean, Yar
right.
could have ridden with me. I'm not sure. I believe he could. I mean, I didn't ride that hard. I think he's a great athlete, and I think after last year, you know, he admitted, you know, it really shocked the crap out of him, and he obviously came unraveled. He was prepared for me this year. I guarantee you, Yarn Fredino was prepared
to do battle
the way through the race.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so excited about that, and to hear that he wasn't going to be there, knowing the dedication he has to the sport, you know, I felt for him personally. Selfishly, I was really disappointed to know that I'd lost a guy that was going to be out there having a real crack, because that's what I need, you know. And this year, you know, I was, and then we had a procession behind. I really want to see him come back, and I think this break will probably do him the world of good, and he'll definitely, you know, I think we still haven't seen the best of Yarn Fredino, and
no.
We haven't seen the best of Patrick Langer, and we definitely haven't seen the best of Cameron Worth. So I think we're in for a pretty exciting, future in the sport.
What I really enjoyed is after what happened in 2017 in Kona, where I don't think Jan really raced a lot of people during the year. He validated at Austria. He flatted in Oceanside. Really didn't have a head-to-head battle with anybody. And we can talk all about the win and the rest of it. The competition in Kona is what makes that race special. And last year, I think the competition took him by surprise. I don't think he had that type of battle, those battles all year long. And so that he was on a mission when he took out Lionel in Oceanside and then took down Patrick a couple times, including Frankfurt, and outsplit him in a run. And then that 106 off the bike in South Africa, that was one of the greatest races of all time. Alistair Brownlee and Javier Gomez and Ben Canute. That was a classic race. And we, hands down, Patrick Lange said it as well, Jan is the overwhelming favorite going in this year's race. And then he pulls out and it changes everything. So, question for you. With Lionel Sanders, like you said, you did everything right this year, and just the final outcome was wrong. Last year, Lionel did everything right? Leads a race. He's, 2 miles from the finish. He runs a 2:51 marathon, gets passed in the last couple miles. But, you sort of tip your hat to Pekka Lange. I had to run 2:39 to beat him. And you come back and go, okay, I did everything right. How can I run 2:48 and win the race? But I think what Lionel did was he sort of ripped up everything, I got to change everything. Were you surprised that basically when you sort of following him a little bit on social that, oh my God, he's changing everything. And last year he did everything right.
Yeah. Well, the way I look at Lionel, I mean, I still to this day, if anyone asks me, the benchmark of the sport, it was what I saw Lionel do in Arizona in 2016. And if he performed anywhere near that last year, he would have already been the world champion. I mean, that's the most phenomenal thing I've ever seen any human do.
Really?
I went to that race, I hadn't even run for 6 months. I had no intention of running. I wanted to see if I could break 4 hours. Didn't even get close. I think I only rode 4:04, 4:05. Lionel actually outsplit me on the bike by 30 or 40 seconds. And he swam. He was about 3 minutes behind, so I led onto the run. That was my first ever, as a race professional, and that was a great starting point for me. I rolled through a 3:30 marathon. Meanwhile, Lana went on to run a 2:41 or 2:42 and broke the world record.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was fresh out of the world tour. I was at the peak of my powers, pretty much on the bike, and I was like, oh, my God. I mean, this guy is just the greatest thing. I knew about Fredino, and with all due respect to him, I mean, that was just phenomenal what he was able to do. But last year, what I do also know about Lionel is he's an amazing competitor. And last year was the perfect storm for him. He had a great swim by his standards. He was there with Sebi and I. He obviously wanted to prove a point to me. And the both of us that he could ride, or be the strongest. Psychologically, he was super strong. He had a good ride. He probably didn't like the fact that I, rode away for him there at the end. He took that chip, on his shoulder onto the run, and he's more than capable of running a 2:50 marathon. And so psychologically, he was strong. He was strong, and Patrick was able to sort of run him down. Do I think he was a threat this year? No, I didn't consider him a threat, but more because I knew where I'd be in the swim. I had a good idea that Sebastian would improve his swim because we talked about it, and he'd be behind. And it's a very different dynamic. You know, even a minute is too much. You know, you're just not in the race. When you're not stronger than everyone, I mean, Lionel isn't stronger than everyone. He can't do what I can do and just ride up to Starkowitz and then ride away. I mean, he doesn't have that power. So he's back in the field. And then psychologically, when you're not getting to the front, I mean, I've had it. It's hard. You know, it's draining. It's a completely different impetus. I feel for Lionel because I feel like, you know, I had a pretty good idea of how to deal with him. And that was just make sure he was on the back foot from the gun. I think it's a pretty simple equation for him. He needs to swim better. You know, he needs to be in that front group. And if he's there, he's always going to be dangerous. But if he's not, and even only 30 seconds or a minute against guys like that, it's too much. And he'll never be, he'll struggle to be a factor. So, I think he's still potentially the most dangerous guy in the sport. But he's also, fortunately, someone that you can tactically deal with, working on his vulnerabilities in the water. So, I really want to, I hear rumours that he's looking at moving to California, and that's great. You know, you're going out of his comfort zone and where he can swim, and I don't think he thinks about riding outside a thing. I certainly don't think he needs to ride outside. The reason he's strong is because he does train inside. But if he feels like he needs a different environment, I think potentially, you know, if you look at the way I do things, I certainly don't try and put myself in a comfortable environment ever. I try and surround myself with the best, you know, in every discipline so that I'm always striving to improve. And I think Lionel being locked away in his cave in Canada and, you know, the social media world telling me how fantastic he is and all these stories and so forth, I think that can potentially make him a bit soft as well and a bit vulnerable. And so that's, you know, I guess something he might have identified from what I heard, and he's looking at doing things differently. He doesn't need to do anything differently, training or racing. I think just psychologically he needs to just believe in himself the same day way he did in Arizona in 2016, because that was just frightening what he was able to achieve there. And I'd love to see him doing more of that.
So what do you think, what you train with Chris Froome, Tour de France champion, What does he think of all this craziness? Is he intrigued by this whole triathlon thing?
Oh, I think so. I mean, he certainly talked about the desire to do a race.
Really?
At some point. Yeah. Both he and Geraint Thomas, they've both swam and run this previous off-season with me. And at some point in the future, he definitely would like to do that. Chris has been with me sort of since the start of all this, you know, in January last year when Tim Kerrison called me and got me up to train with Chris, and we started talking about, you know, should we have a real crack at it? And Chris was certainly a big supporter and has always been a big supporter of mine through it all. And you know, he sent me a message after the stage he won in the Giro, you know, the famous stage where he stole the race. And he said, mate, it was nothing more than one of your Ironman efforts. You know, I just tried to stay around 300 watts and not go above 400. You know, I've got to be ready for tomorrow. I don't have to run a marathon, thank God. So, you know, he even references and uses his racing, you know, uses things that we talk about in training sessions we do to have a new element of surprise in the sport of cycling, which is just fantastic. And I think also, you know, shows you what Tim Kerrison is just such a genius about. And, you know, there's certainly been sessions that we all now do, which were sort of geared towards my triathlons, you know, 2-hour time trial efforts and 4-hour time trial efforts. Specifically, I mean, cyclists don't really need to, you wouldn't think, do that.
No, yeah.
But we do multiple of them, and obviously they want to make sure that I know that they're stronger, or at least as strong as me at them, so they're pretty intense, you know. Yeah, so he really seemed interested in it. You know, we talk a lot about everything, fueling, and even this year, you know, about body weight. And he's obviously Kenyan, born in Kenya, so he, you know, has a great understanding of the endurance runners and so forth. So he's also been a great resource for us with regard to those sort of things and how that culture does things. And so, yeah, I'm just really grateful and fortunate to have. I mean, I literally have the best training partners you know, in the world for the sport that I do. It's quite a surreal opportunity. The way I dreamed that it would be if I was to do this sport properly, but you know, one that in reality I never thought would turn out as perfectly as it has. I mean, there's honestly not a sponsor, not a training partner, not a sports scientist or a physiologist in the endurance world that I could dream of working with that we don't already have on speed dial. I mean, we've just assembled the most amazing team, and we're having a great time with it. I've always dreamed of being a great athlete. You know, if you ask me as a kid what did I want to be, I wanted to do everything. I wanted to play NFL, I wanted to play baseball, I wanted to play Australian football, I wanted to be a pro surfer. I wanted to do it all at once. I wake up now every day, and I think that's why I'm able to, I've been able to come into this sport, because I don't really think about waking up every day and figuring, okay, how can I, you know, swim, bike and run the best today. I think about, okay, let's go to swimming and see how fast I can swim. You know, then I get on the bike and I go, okay, that's trying, you know, figure out how I'm going to cycle at world class level, you know, and then go and run. And obviously, I'm nowhere near world class, but I'm certainly giving it everything I've got to be the best I possibly can be. And then knowing that on race day, we just have to put it together. I just can't wait for the sun to come up every morning. Or some days I get started before the sun comes up. So excited.
So what would it mean to you to win Kona? I mean, because you, like you've said, you've ridden at the highest level. You've rode in the Olympics. People know that you have one goal in this sport. It's not to go win, you know, Ironman Lanzarote. It's to win Kona. What does it mean? What will it mean to you when you win this race?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be the culmination of everything I've done in sport. You know, and it took me 33, 32 years to even get to the sport. And I guess a lot of people would see that as potentially a disadvantage. I don't see that at all. I mean, the one thing I've learned since getting to America was, you know, things seem to happen for a reason. And I've gone with the flow a hell of a lot more in life since I came to the US, and I've met some wonderful people, you included, and you, Bob, and your organisation. You know, it's just been, been a wonderful thing for me. You talked about the hat. I mean, the hat is just to remind me of how fortunate I am. You know, when you're out there running and you spend a weekend at the Challenge Athletes, best weekend in tri down there in San Diego, and what these kids just go through. I mean, we don't have, you've talked about it enough on the show. It just gives you goosebumps every time, you know, you think about it. And I think that Kona's the opportunity for me. People ask me what victory, you know, in sport would be, and it's the opportunity to race the best when they're at the best and beat them. And as far as endurance sports go, you know, there's a few great events with the Tour de France, of course, and Kona, that would be the culmination of my life as a sportsman, and ideally do it in a way that, you know, inspires others to not necessarily even do that, but just give whatever they want to do in life, 100% of their time and focus, and definitely never give up the hope that you're going to find that passion at some point. You know, it doesn't have to happen today, but as long as you keep working and just keep dedicated to something, something great's going to come your way.
So now, after finishing top 10 in Kona, I'm not sure how many points that gives you, or with the new system, I think you have to win an Ironman race and you're in. Will this year be less Ironman distance races than the last 2 years, since you've sort of gone through the learning process now? What do you see?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they've changed the system where you need to perform in a race. You need to be in at least the top two, pretty much, in all the main 2 to 3 in the biggest races, which are all the ones I do. I mean, I've looked through, and all the ones I do have more allocated slots, so which would indicate that I tend to always race the races with the better guys.
Right.
I think, Bob, you know, if you genuinely think you're a contender for Kona, the qualification, not that it's, you know, something you can disregard and think that it's a walk-up start, but, at this point in time, I'm not stressed about that. I'm pretty confident that I can ensure that happens. But yes, we'll definitely do things a little bit differently next year. I mean, it's been a huge learning curve this year because I've been able to race every race at the front. Yeah, I've been past, obviously, every race pass allowed in the run. But, you know, we've certainly gathered enough intel now to have a pretty good idea of how to go out there and execute, you know, the race the way we feel like we need to. So I think that it's time to go back and do some training the first part of the year. For the first time ever, I mean, dedicate to running. I mean, it's taken 2 years just to develop a body where I can actually run and actually train and not get injured and not get tired. And that really only clicked in about the last sort of 6 weeks leading into Kona, where I was really able to train. And we saw those times drop in our mare and also in training and my resilience. So the first part of the year will be the first time I've ever really been able to do some running training. And really excited about that. We're going to work with the guys at Nike and target the LA Marathon, you know, and see how fast I can run a dead marathon.
Oh, you're going to run LA?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other issue I've got at the moment or had is psychologically. You know, I'm so confident swimming and cycling. I think I showed that in Kona. I mean, I think I made it look like I knew exactly where I needed to be and wanted to be and put myself there.
Right.
Once I got on the run, the doubts creep in. You know, it's hot, it's a long way. Yeah. You know, you got Patrick Langer running you down. And mentally, I just didn't have the same, I don't have the same confidence in what I'm trying to do. You know, I was on the bike. I couldn't care less if Andrew Starkwitz is on my wheel. I know that, you know, if I need to or if I want to or whatever, doing my thing, I'm going to drop anyone. So I don't have that confidence running. And, of course, a lot of it boils down to ability. You know, I don't have belief and confidence in my running, but it is a psychological thing. So we need to teach me to suffer. You know, I need to run in training and suffer. I need to really hurt myself the same way I'm capable of doing on the bike or in the pool, and then do a marathon where I go to the well, you know, where I find out what it feels like on that other side. I've never, ever done that. You know, people like Lionel and, you know, you watch Ali Brownlee and even Jan, the way they talk about those sort of things, and I got no idea what they're talking about. I mean, I'm sure I do it just naturally on the bike.
Right.
And it just means nothing to me, but I just can't do it running. So that's the big thing we're going to work on. And Brett Kirby there at Nike, who's, of course, been in charge of the Breaking 2 project and looks after Kipchoge. I mean, you know, you couldn't have anyone better to prepare you for that. And they picked up on that straight away watching the race. So that'll be the focus in the first part of the year, and then we'll come up with a strategy to, you know, to ease the swim and the bike back in on that. But ideally, turn up to Kona next year with the run being my strength, not the other two.
Exactly.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, and also next year, you potentially could have, besides Patrick Lange and the usual suspects, Javier Gomez, Alistair Brownlee, Jan Frodeno, Lionel Sanders, Sebastian Kienle, and whoever moves over, you know, from potentially some ITU guys, some other ITU guys might come over. So the field's going to be amazing.
That's the most exciting thing about it. You know, the better the field, you know, the greater the victory, isn't
right.
it? You know,
yep. true. Yeah,
and I think it's fantastic that, that, you know, we've obviously targeted specifically Ironman. I mean, it seems to be the greatest chance I've got for success, but also because Kona is the mecca, you know, it's like the Tour de France. So it's really great to see, or it's interesting to see that all the other disciplines are starting to realize the same thing. You know, I mean, you've got guys that have had endless amounts of success at ITU, like Gomez this year, but, you know, came to Kona, he's not a walk-up start winner anymore.
Right. Nope.
You know, like perhaps Jan was when he came across. And I'm sure Ali doesn't have a huge confidence that he's just going to walk up and win. I'm sure Ali believes he can win, and we all know he can win, but he knows he's going to have to work his ass off and be better than, you know, he's ever been to do that. It was funny, Gomez, someone asked me about, you know, him there being there and what went wrong. I said, well, either he just wasn't really prepared or, you know, for what to expect, and it all came as a bit of a shock to him. I said, or he had the worst day in his life because he's the first professional triathlete male runner that I've ever passed in the marathon.
He's the first one.
the first one, the first time I've ever passed someone in the run. So, you know, that was pretty crazy. I remember, someone told me I was in 10th, you know, about 2 or 3 miles from the finish, and I thought, that's all right, I'll just stay here behind Gomez. That's pretty cool. Like, you know, you finish with a champion like that. And then I thought, oh, you know what, I might go up and run with him. So I, you know, he was just sort of ahead, so I just put in a few extra bursts. And as I got to the back of him, I thought, no, I might just get in front of him, because then I'm in 9th, then I'm definitely in the top 10, you know. And so I just sort of came past him. I gave him a bit of a word of encouragement. I went past, didn't get anything back, and I thought, oh, wow, he must be hurting. And, yeah, sure enough, he ended up slipping to 11th, which was disappointing. It would have been great to see him up there on the stage with us. But, you know, I think it's as much as I know he would have dreamed of coming there and running everyone's legs off and winning on the Boo and all that, you know, that's just going to drive him. He's a great champion, and he's been a great ambassador for the sport, and there's no way he wants that to be people's memory of him in Kona. And so that's another exciting thing. You know, he's experienced it now. He's prepared for the fact that, you know, obviously particularly the bike is probably a hell of a lot harder than he anticipated. And he'll be better too. So, it's really exciting. It's really exciting what we've got ahead of us in, you know, 11 and a half months' time.
So what's fascinating to me, if you look at the top four from that South Africa 70.3 Worlds, Jan Frodeno comes off with a hip stress fracture. Alistair Brownlee really was his season was pretty much done after that. Javier Gomez was pretty beat up for Kona, and Ben Canute was really wasted after that race, like 3 weeks of pretty worthless training. You know, trying to do those hard efforts back to back, you know, 3 weeks or a month apart. It's I know in cycling you guys do it every day, but it's just a different game.
Yeah, and that's why they question, you know, the fact that I race all the time. But the reality is I'm not running fast.
Right.
And I've proven that now. You know, I mean, I've done one run that was low 250s, you know, which is almost 10 minutes faster than I'm doing all these other training races. I mean, that's a huge difference. And still, even that race, I didn't feel like I was running that hard. So those guys, though, are just, you know, I mean, Jan and
106.
They took the sport to a completely different level. I mean, you're talking about a 3 or 4 minute running PB of the greatest athlete, you know, triathletes that we've seen, you know, particularly in the last decade. So that has, I mean, that's always going to take a toll. I mean, if I went out and rode 500 watts on the bike, yeah, I'd be sore, but, you know, which would be a hell of a lot higher than has ever been done before, but you wouldn't have you wouldn't have the same damage yet, you know, cardiovascular-wise, it'd have the same impact, but just that impact that of running that fast, it just isn't good for your body. I mean, these guys, it's be very specific now. It's a bit like, you know, on the velodrome, you know, you don't get the sprint guys, the team sprint guys racing the team pursuit. Two very, very
different games. Yeah.
Which they're doing absolutely, you know, mind-boggling speeds in their own right. And I think you're finding in half Ironman, in ITU, and of course now in Ironman, what Patrick was able to show in Kona, it's becoming extremely specific. And people are very, very good at it. And you need to make a choice. So, I mean, Jan potentially could have pulled, we'll never know. Do I think he'll adopt the same approach next year? Probably not. I'd say he'll probably make sure he's fresh for Kona.
Exactly.
He's not going to want to miss it a third year in a row.
No.
And I think that just shows you the respect for the event and the respect we all have for each other. As competitors, you know, we've got to be their best.
Exactly.
You want to be the man at the top.
Cam, as always, thank you for taking so much time. Thank you for your support of CAF, having you here for the second year in a row, spending the entire weekend with our kids. It's it means a lot to me, but I know it means even more to the kids.
Yeah. I wouldn't miss it for the world, Bob. And as I said, I mean, that just puts your life into perspective for you. And you know, and I think the Nike tent, you know, you have a body, you're an athlete. You know, I've never seen something that can't ring truer. Just really honored to be a part of all that. And I mean it sincerely. You know, it's a big part of my, you know, the journey in the sport and race day, seeing your guys out there often. It's something that really inspires me, and it's a great message you've got, and let's just keep this sport going, you know, keep growing, keep it happening. You know, what a wonderful time to be in it. We're really lucky.
Perfect. Cam Wirth has been our guest again. We're brought to you by Toughman Triathlon Series, VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, by Polar, Blood, Sweat, and Data. Premium Plus Sports, that's premiumplus-sports.com, USA-swimrun.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We just sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.